Can one obtain Nibbana in this life? A talk given by Mr. Alex Robertson at the Buddhist Vihara, Kuala Lumpur.
It's indeed a privilege and an honor to be with you to even today, my third talk, and I find that there is a large gathering gathered here to listen to the words of the Buddha. The subject today is a very interesting subject, and some of you are keenly interested in the subject, and all of us have the aspiration to attain Nirvana. Now the question is, as the President also remarked, some seem to think that we have to go through the cycles of births and deaths for a long period of time for us to attain Nirvana. Whereas there are others who say that one could attain Nirvana in this life itself. But there are still others who say that it is not possible to attain Nirvana in this life. And you find a few who say that if a person develops certain conditions and certain qualities, then it is possible to attain Nirvana in this life itself. Now let us examine all these propositions in the light of the teachings as given in the Buddhist scriptures. Now it is mentioned in the Mahaparinibbana Sutta, the last discourse of the Buddha, while he was passing to Parinibbana. The Buddha told Ananda that so long as my disciples, both monks and laymen, practice the teachings, the world will not be devoid of arahats. In other words, it means that if we practice the teachings assiduously and diligently, if we practice sila, samadhi and panya, virtue, concentration and wisdom, or in other words, as the Dhammapada would say, sabba papassa akaranam kusalassa upasampada chatitta pariyodapanam etam buddhana sasanam, which means to refrain from all evil, to cultivate the good, to purify the mind. This is the teaching of all Buddhas. In other words, it means virtue, concentration and wisdom. So if a person practices these three, then it is possible that one could attain Nirvana in this life. But there are other utterances in the by the Buddha in other places of the Pali Canon and in the Buddhist scriptures, where the Buddha says that a person should develop and cultivate certain other virtues. Because we must not take a particular sutta or discourse out of context. We have to look at it from various angles, because the Buddha delivered discourses and sermons to suit the temperaments and dispositions of various individuals. Now when an ordinary layman comes, the Buddha doesn't speak about Nirvana. He doesn't speak about Anatta or the doctrine of dependent origination, Patisamuppada. He will speak about the ordinary lay duties, husband towards the wife, wife towards the husband, pupil towards the teacher, the employer to the employee, and the employer towards the employee, reciprocal duties as given in the Sigalavada Sutta. When a king comes, he speaks about the Dasaraja Dhamma, of how to be a good ruler, how to make the country prosperous, and that sort of thing. When a banker comes, now there was a banker called Anadapindika. He was a generous benefactor of the Buddha Sasada. When he came to the Buddha, he didn't preach to him about Nirvana. He spoke to him of how to become a good banker. Now see, the Buddha was a psychologist par excellence. He preached his sermons to suit the IQ, as he's saying today, or the various levels of human development or mental development, to suit them, he preached the sermon. Now to this banker, he gave four guidelines of how to be a good banker. Buddha's first guideline was that a banker should be industrious. He should be diligent and ardent. He should not be a lazy man. And he should earn his livelihood through just and righteous means. The first principle. The second, that he should save something for a rainy day. And we find the savings banks. Now today in Sri Lanka also and in various parts of the world, you find the savings bank. You must save something. Because if you just spend recklessly, then you will get into debt. The second. Then the third, he gave a moral basis to his teachings. Socio-economic problems when he dealt with, he gave a moral and ethical significance to these material things. He said you must have good friends, Kalyana Mitra. Now if you don't have good friends, what happens? You will indulge in all type of gambling and debauchery, and then what will happen? You will turn out to be a pauper. And last of all, the Buddha said to this banker, one should live within one's means. One should not be too extravagant, nor too miserly. One should live within one's means. So my friends, the point that I was trying to drive at is that the Buddha preaches sermons to suit the temperaments and dispositions of individuals. Now, when the Buddha addressed the people in the Kunu country, he spoke about the Satipatthana Sutta, the four foundations of mindfulness, which forms the quintessence of Vipassana and Samatha meditation. Now there, one must understand the background of the people of Kuru, of the country Kuru. They were a mature type of individuals. They were just like lotuses above the surface of the water. When the glorious sun falls on those lotuses, it will blossom forth into beautiful flowers. Because the Buddha knew that they will be able to understand the deep significance, the profound teachings as given in the Satipatthana Sutta. The Buddha didn't preach the Satipatthana Sutta to every Dick, Tom and Harry, to put it in colloquial English. He spoke to those people because they were mature, they were able to understand. And then he said, if you practice the Satipatthana for 7 years, you will be able to attain the various stages of sanctity. You can become an Arhat, you can become an Anagami, a Sovan, the various stages of sanctity. Then he went on to 1 year, then he came down to 1 month, then he came down to 7 days. And he said, within 7 days you can attain Nirvana. Now some people are taken up by that. And I know many Westerners who come to Sri Lanka and go to these Sylvan Solitudes or to Hermitages and start practicing Satipatthana Sutra. And they find that after so many years of practice, they have not attained anything. Then some of them get disgusted and give up even the ropes and go away. Now there you must understand the context in which the Buddha preached. And later on a friend of mine discovered that some of them were drug addicts. They expected quick results, instant results, and they found that the Satipatthana Sutta gave them instant results. Because today we live in an age where we want instant results. There is instant meditation, instant coffee, instant tea, then we find instant cricket also. 40 overs, then we find instant in Western countries, as I said yesterday, we find instant marriage, instant divorce, and they want instant nibbana. But we must understand the context, not that I say that we can't attain nirvana in this life itself, but certain conditions should be fulfilled, just like a pupil, if he is to enter the university, he should have certain essential qualifications. If he doesn't have those qualifications, he can't enter the university. So if he are to enter the university of Buddhist education, of Buddhist meditation, we must have certain qualifications. Because the Buddha is not a savior. He is only a teacher, a guide, friend and philosopher. We must have the prerequisite qualities. The Buddha can't take us into Nirvana. We have to cultivate and develop virtue, concentration and wisdom. It's something like this. The Buddha is like a doctor, as I mentioned last night, a peerless, incomparable physician. He gives you the medicine. You have to take it. The Buddha can't make you to take it. It is left to you. So in like manner, here in the Satipatthana Sutta, the Buddha preached to certain people who were mature, just like lotuses above the surface of the water, and they were able to attain nirvana in that life itself. Then the Buddha gives in the text, in the Arya Parayasana Sutta, where we find four levels of spiritual development. Just like you find today grading in the universities and schools, grading. There are four grades of people, levels of maturity, where you will be able to attain nirvana. The first grade, as I said, are those people who are mature and who are able to attain nirvana in this life itself, just like lotuses above the surface of the water. Now, during the time of the Buddha, when he preached a sermon, there were many who attained various stages of sanctity. Then there was a certain person called Bahia. He was going on his arms round. The Buddha also was going on his arms round. And then he said he was in a hurry and he wanted the Buddha to preach his Dhamma in a nutshell. And the Buddha preached it in a nutshell. And he said, if you see things, just see. If you hear things, just hear. And just when you smell or taste certain things, just taste them. Don't think of whether it is delicious or think that a certain beautiful sight is beautiful. And when you listen to music, just listen to the sounds. But all can't do that. When we listen to music, some of us are transported into a world of ecstasy. When we see a very beautiful, charming, alluring figure, we are taken up by the beauty of that person. When we see the well-chiseled features, the seductive smile, and when we see the beautiful eyes like diamonds, we are taken up by it. All kinds of Buddha was preaching this person Bhaya. Now he was a mature person. And the Buddha said that if he had listened to him for a little more time, he would attain the paths and fruits. Then when the Buddha preached the first sermon, as you all know, the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta. Can you hear me? I wonder whether the bike is just below me. People just round, because I wonder whether he's carrying through the voice. It's all right here. Then we find that the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, the first sermon delivered by the Buddha to the five ascetics, is coming down a bit. There he went into greater details. Now we know that there are certain lotuses which take some time to blossom forth into flowers. It takes about 2 or 3 days' time. When the Buddha explained his doctrine in detail, as he did to the five ascetics, there was one person called Kondan, as you have heard. He attained the first stage of sanctity. Or in the Buddhist text it is mentioned that the eye of wisdom, the immaculate, spotless eye of vision, of truth, arose in him. When the Buddha explained the doctrine in greater detail, it is just like lotuses which take some time, 2 or 3 days' time to blossom forth. It is something like this, you know, when teachers explain to students. I think my good friend who has been the Director General of Education, and some of you teachers know, that certain students, when you explain a lesson, they are able to take in then and there. They are able to absorb it. There are others who take some time. You have to explain them in detail. Then they will be able to understand and comprehend. So the second class of people, that is called Ugraditanya, Vipaditanya, and given the Pali, first one is just like lotuses above the surface of the water. When the Buddha preaches his sermon, they are able to attain paths and fruits, the different stages of sanctity. Others take some time. It is just like lotuses which take about 2 or 3 days' time to blossom forth. Then there are still others who have to be explained in greater detail, with similes and metaphors, with stories, with parables, And then only they will be able to attain Nirvana. They are just like lotuses, which are just still below the water. And it takes some time, for about 7 days or so, for them to blossom forth. Then there are other lotuses which are submerged or immersed in the water, in the muddy water. However much the rays of the sun falls on them, they will not blossom forth. We find some students, however much the student teachers will take trouble to explain to them, they are not able to understand anything. They are duds. Now, there are others, the Buddha says, who will, however much the Dhamma is explained to them, they are not able to attain Nirvana in this life. It will be in lives to come, like in the case of Pasenadi of Kosala, Devadatta. Not in this life, in some other life. Now, these are the four categories. Now, the question arises, where do we stand? You and I. Surely, when I am preaching the Dhamma, none of you will attain arahatship. I don't have the qualities, the essential prerequisites, just like a Samma Sambuddha, to preach a sermon that will strike a responsive chord in your heart. It will go straight into your heart. I am not able to do that. Then, the second method is, as I said, there are people who will take some time by explaining the doctrine in detail, Ugaritanya, Viparitanya. They will take some time. Even that, there are so many monks who are preaching preaching sermons, so many laymen, but none of the devotees attain the various stages of sanctity. Then the third also we don't find. Then the last, we find good number of them. But according to my interpretation, how I look at this, this is my interpretation, not given in the text, we are borderline cases. That means we are not immersed in the mud. They are people who are not able to attain in this nirvana, in this life. We, to put it in percentages, the first category, they get 100 marks. They are able to attain nirvana in this life. Second one, 75. Third, 55. Last, they get naught. In our case, we get about 33 borderline cases. Because we have, as the President mentioned to you, we have the Dhamma with us. Now that is a great blessing. And we have good friends around us. And we have this good environment. In the Mangala Sutra it is said, and we have done meritorious deeds in the past to be residing here in Malaysia and to find a place which is conducive to the practice and realization of the teachings of the Buddha. As the Mangala Sutra would put it, I'll say it in Pali and give the English rendering, Patirupa desa vaso cha pubbe takata punyata atta samma panidhi cha etam mangalam uttama. Blessings for one's mundane and supramundane progress. Three conditions. If you are to progress, if you are to be a good businessman or a good teacher, if you are to climb the social ladder and attain success, or to attain the various stages of sanctity, you must have these three conditions. First, patirupa desa vasocha. You must be born in a suitable environment. Now, Malaysia, and particularly this place, is a very suitable environment, a congenial place for the practice and learning of the Buddha Dhamma. But if you take a place like, we say, up in the Western world, where there is so much of the abundance of the good things of life, and people have forgotten about spiritual values, those countries where materialism prevails and reigns supreme, we won't have such an environment now for the development of spiritual values. Patirupa desa vaso cha. Pubbeta kata punyata. Having done meritorious deeds in the past. Now, all of you have done meritorious deeds in the past. That's why you have got the opportunity to be born in a suitable and congenial place and listen to the Dhamma. and have good friends. Now that is a great blessing. Now there are, and to be born with all your faculties intact, you are not born blind or deaf or crippled, because that's a disadvantage. Now you have all those blessings because you have performed meritorious deeds in the past. To put it in simple terms, we must have practiced dana, sila, bhavana. Otherwise, we won't have those all the material comforts and the benefits that would enable one to practice and learn the Buddha's teaching. To put it in simple terms, dana helps us to get the good things of life, good motor cars, good buildings, a good education, good friends. That is due to dana. But that itself is not sufficient for us to have the other benefits in the Buddha's asana. There must be sila. You must practice the five precepts to be born as a human being. Dana will help us to give the provisions in a journey that you go. Sila will give you a birth as a human being with all the faculties intact, without being born blind and deaf. Bhavana gives you the intelligence, the study of the arts and sciences. But there are some Buddhists, I do not know whether we find such Buddhists here in Malaysia, but in Sri Lanka there are people who believe that dana itself is sufficient for them to attain nirvana. But dana gives the good things of life. Now we find in Sri Lanka, I have not seen them here, but I see them in some of these palatial buildings, we find these Alsatian dogs. Now many of them have many benefits which ordinary human beings don't enjoy. But now here in Malaysia and Singapore, we find that materially the people are advanced. But in Sri Lanka and undeveloped countries, we find that some of these dogs are fed better than human beings. Now when the master goes in the car, the members of the family occupies the back seat. The dog is in the front seat. Then, during the time in Sri Lanka when there was a shortage of milk products, poor people, you know, they were not able to feed their children with milk foods. But the Alsatian dogs were fed with Nespray and Lux Spray. We had Lux Spray there. And then, not only that, because they have done meritorious deeds in the past, they have been given. That's why they have been born as Alsatian dogs. But I don't say that every person who gives is born as Alsatian dog. But unless he practices the second, you know, he might give, but if he has not practiced the five precepts, that means if he tries to harm others, killing, stealing, sexual misconduct, then uttering lies and falsehood, and spreading tales and creating some sort of enmity between individuals, and taking intoxicating drinks and drugs. If such a person indulges in that sort of thing, if he breaks the precepts, then he has no chance of being born as a human being. And in Sri Lanka and in other underdeveloped countries in Southeast Asia, we find poor people, they find it difficult to eke out an existence in abject poverty. You find them in the pavements, beggars and all that. Now they have not done dana in the past, but they have performed or practiced sila. That's why they have been born as human beings. Then we come to bhavana. This is only an analogy for you to understand that this dana, sila, bhavana, three of them must be there. You can't practice one and attain nirvana. There are others in Colombo. It is, I have to speak from my experience in Colombo. We find boys and girls like you, young girls and boys, who are born in the lap of luxury. They go about in limousines, they have all kinds of amenities and facilities, and many of them, you know, they don't have sufficient intelligence. They go for tuition classes to learn mathematics, pure mathematics, applied mathematics. In spite of the fact that they take all that tuition, they fail in the examination.
Why? Because they have not studied the arts and sciences, bausachancha, sitpancha. And because they have not practiced meditation in the past, that's why they don't have the intelligence, that understanding, to comprehend the teachings of the Buddha. Therefore, to attain nirvana, there must be the dana, sila, bhavana that you should have practiced in the past. That is called the parami. That is also an essential factor. However much you may try, however much you may practice the teachings, if you don't have that past backing, pubbeta kata punyata, then you will not be able to attain nirvana. And the other thing is, atta samma panidicha. You must make the correct effort. That means you must persevere. You must be industrious, just like trying to be a good businessman, or if you want to pass the examinations. You have to persevere, you have to strive, be industrious, diligent, ardent. Then only you will succeed. Now, my friends, these are the three cardinal principles that you should have practiced here, now, and in the past for one to attain nirvana. So we find that there are certain conditions, essential prerequisites that one should develop if one is to attain nirvana. Some people say that effort itself is sufficient. No use of doing how much. There are some meditation centers in Sri Lanka, in Burma, in Thailand, where people go and practice meditation. And some of them, they strive hard. And they want to attain nirvana in this life itself, but they fail. Effort by itself is not sufficient. There was, during the time of the Buddha, a monk called Sona. He practiced meditation day and night because he had an idea, and he burned the midnight oil. And he wanted to attain nirvana in this life itself, but he was not able to attain. And he used to walk up and down. He was born from an aristocratic family. Before he joined the order, before he became a monk, he was an accomplished musician. Now you find many young girls and boys who go for music lessons. But this person, Sona, was a distinguished, accomplished musician. And later on he gave up his music career and joined the order. Now the Buddha knew that this person was striving too hard. But he didn't have that concentration of mind, that tranquility of mind. So the Buddha gave a beautiful simile, the simile of the lute, because this person was accomplished in playing the lute. So Buddha gave that simile, because then that person will be able to understand what meditation is. The Buddha said, Sona, if the strings of the lute were loose, you will not be able to get the proper tune. Now see, the Buddha used very various analogies so that people can understand. Then he said, Sona, if the strings of the lute are tight and taut, then you will not be able to get the proper tune. As some of you musicians will know, you have to key it to the proper way, proper length. Then the Buddha said, if they have to be keyed in the proper way, then you will be able to get the proper tune. In like manner, when you strive to attain nirvana, we must balance the faculties. You must not strive too hard, be like a bull in a china shop. There are some people who run about here and there, very restless. They are sometimes good organizers. But even that, they must have a certain amount of tranquility, some restraint. Some people, you know, they try to strive hard. They are like, as I said, a bull in a china shop. That is one extreme, restlessness. On the other side, there are some people who are very drowsy, very apathetic, very slow. That is called teena middha. I dealt with that in my last talk last night. That means sloth and torpor of the mind. They are not dynamic. They don't have the drive and that dedication. Others are restless. But you must strike the middle path. As I gave that illustration of the swimmer. For you to be a good swimmer, you must not hurry nor tarry. You must not go too slow nor too fast. If you hurry, you will be carried away by the tumultuous waves. If you tarry, down you go into the ocean or the river. So we must adopt the middle path even in striving and to attain nirvana. Now, my friends, the subject of meditation is also important for us to attain nirvana. If you get the wrong type of meditation, subject of meditation, then we will not be able to attain nirvana. Because during the Buddha's time, there was Rahula, the Buddha's own son. He was asked to practice meditation on anapanasati, in and out breathing, concentrate on the natural breath, by Sariputta, the Buddha's chief disciple, who was noted for his wisdom. He asked him to practice anapanasati meditation for him to attain nirvana. Now this is a good, classic object lesson for us, for those who practice meditation. You must get the correct type of subject. Just like when you enter the university, you have to do arts and science. Some are very good in arts, some in science, some in medicine, some in accountancy. You have to get the aptitude. You are talented in certain ways. In the past, you have practiced certain types of meditation. So you have to, that talent, that aptitude, what you call those predominant propensities, sankaras, that is, they are latent in the mind. And the Buddha is able to rake it up. So in the case of Rahula, the Buddha's own son, Sariputta asked him to practice meditation on in and out breathing, but he was not able to attain arahatship or attain nirvana in this life. The Buddha knew it through his paranormal clairvoyant vision. He told Rahula, he didn't want to say that Sariputta gave the wrong type of meditation, but he told Rahula, if you want to attain nirvana, then Rahula was only 7 years. Mind you, 7 years he was. Now the Buddha, he knew that he won't be able to practice this meditation and attain nirvana. So he said, Rahula, he spoke to him about the value of speaking the truth. He preached the Ambalakita Rahula Vada Sutta. Now for a small boy of 7 years, you can't preach something very deep and profound. And we know normally small boys and girls, they utter falsehoods, they tell lies. So the Buddha spoke to him about the value of speaking the truth. How did he do it? By using the Montessori method. Now see, this is a very valuable thing for teachers. He used various methods, audiovisual method, discovery method, then from the known to the unknown, from the concrete to the abstract. He was a peerless teacher, Anuttaro Purusadhamma Sarathi, a peerless teacher of tameable men. So in the case of Rahula, he said, Rahula, he took an empty vessel. And he said, now in this vessel there is no water. He said, the person who utters falsehood or lies is just like this empty vessel. See the Montessori method. Then he put a little water into this. Now, Rahula, do you know that there is water in this? Yes. Then he turned it upside down. And then he said, a person who tells lies or utter falsehood is empty just like that overturned vessel. Then he put it upside down again, the other way. Turned it upwards. And then he poured some water into it and filled the pitcher. Then the Buddha said, a person who speaks the truth. Such a person is just like this water, pitcher filled with water. And then he said, Rahula, don't utter falsehood even for fun. Now sometimes you find these white lies, you find white lies and black lies. Some people say, no, I'm telling a lie, you know, just to go a situation if you don't put a people into trouble. But you start with white lies, and later on, sometimes to get certain gains and all that, you try to later on those lies will become black lies. So we must, Buddha said, Rahula, now at that age of 7, Then when he was 18, now see how the Buddha preached his sermons to suit the intelligence, the maturity, the spiritual levels of development in the case of the individual. Now Rahul has attained 18 years. When he attained 18 years, then he knew that he was a bit mature. He was an adolescent, an adult. Then he preached the Maharaulavada Sutta. You refer in the Buddhist texts. Maharaula. He gave seven types of meditation. Now see the mythology. Now when you are in the kindergarten, you can't speak to a kindergarten student and lecture to him on Einstein's theory of relativity. To the kindergarten student, you can't tell him, he must know the basic arithmetic. In the same way, the Buddha didn't want to preach on deep things to Rahula when he was 7 years. When he came to 18, he was a bit mature. Then he gave subjects of meditation. Now he was yet not mature to attain Nirvana. Now Buddha prepared the ground, step by step, just like a good teacher will prepare the ground for the student to get through the examination, to get a degree. So it has to be built up gradually. Now Buddha was building up gradually. Now see the Buddha's methods that he adopted. He told Rahula, he gave seven subjects of meditation. He was a psychologist par excellence. He said, Rahula, practice the meditation on loving kindness to get rid of ill will. As I told you yesterday, for ill will, hatred, the best medicine is maitri or loving kindness or benevolence. All of us have that ill will, hatred. So to get rid of that, the best medicine is loving kindness. Second, karuna, practice karuna, compassion, Rahula, to get rid of cruelty and thoughts of violence. Now that's the best meditation for us also. For us to attain Nirvana, we have to first of all build up our character and personality. We have to be ready. Sila must be the character. Now for a good athlete, if he wants to be a good athlete or cricketer, he must be disciplined. If a cricketer or athlete is up to drinking and gambling and debauchery, he can't turn out to be a good cricketer or an athlete. He has to discipline himself. To be a moral athlete, to be a spiritual athlete, to be ready for Nirvana, we must control ourselves. We must discipline ourselves. If there is no discipline, we can't attain Nirvana. So we have to build up our character first of all. Then he told Rahula, Rahula, meditate on mudita, on sympathetic joy, or rejoice in the joys of others to get rid of jealousy, to get rid of envy. That is there in all of us. We are jealous of others. When we see, as I said the other day, when Bertrand Russell in his book Conquest of Happiness says, if a lady finds another lady better dressed, not these ladies, then she will cast malevolent eyes on that person. So the best way, there is this thing called professional jealousy. A doctor is jealous of another doctor, a lawyer is jealous of another lawyer, an accountant is jealous of another accountant, clerk is jealous of another clerk, and the beggar is jealous of the king of the beggars. So we see that to get rid of that bad quality, now these, you have to gradually do that. If you want to attain Nirvana, you can't do it all of a sudden. You have to gradually build up your character and personality. Then the Buddha told Rahula. Now he was building up his character. Now see the wonderful method. All of a sudden you can't meditate. You have to discipline yourself, build up your character and personality. He said, meditate on mudita, on sympathetic joy, or rejoice in the joys of others, if you are to get rid of jealousy and envy, which is predominant, which is a predominant trait in human nature. Then he said, Rahula, meditate on upekkha, equanimity. Have a balanced mind to get rid of restlessness and worry. Now today in this scientific technological age, people are harassed and tormented by all types of anxieties, all types of psychological disorders, mental diseases, and sociologists say that this is a sick society, the Western world. People are sick. And the best type of medicine for that restlessness, for that worry, is upekkha, to have a balanced mind. not to be perturbed or not to be flustered by the ups and downs of life. Now, business people especially, they have the gains and losses. And to have that balanced mind, to have a poised mind, you have to cultivate some type of meditation. So he told Rahula, now meditate on these four, and you will have a balanced personality. Then he went on. Now see, step by step he was building up his personality. For him to attain Nirvana, he was building up his personality. Then he told Rahula, meditate on Asubha. That means on the unwholesome or the unpleasant nature of life, to get rid of lust. Because he knew that he was a young, like just like these young faces that I see here, they are bubbling with so much of energy, with so much of emotions. And there's the exuberance of youth. I said mother intoxications, you not only get drunk by taking drugs and intoxicating drinks. When you are young also, you are drunk with so much of energy. Then the Buddha told Rahula, meditate on the unpleasant nature of life, because he was a young man and he thought to himself that I am as beautiful as the Buddha. Buddha. The Buddha is adorned with the 32 marks of a great man. He has a golden complexion, a beautiful voice. I am also having this, a young person. Now, the Buddha was a psychologist. This is my commentary. This is not given in the commentary in the text. I am commenting. Now there he knew that this person, a young person of 80 years, just like I see some young faces, beautiful faces here. He want to show to him that here this beauty is but skin deep. If you take an X-ray photograph, you see all what is inside you. Now because of the skin, everything is covered up. Now just look at it. Buddhism is not pessimism. It is not optimism. It is a doctrine of reality. You have to see it as it is. As a scientist would observe and see a thing. Objective observation. As I mentioned in my talk, first talk on Buddhism and science. Now just see, my friend, the Buddha says, or the commentator Buddha Ghosa says, that if you take the skin off, then all the dogs and all the other birds and all that will come near you and take those parts of the body and they will depart. Now we have this beauty parade. No doubt there are beautiful people, but that is only skin deep when you like to see the true nature of it. And the beauty parade will become a dog parade. Because when you take the skin out, as the Buddha says, now this is not pessimism, then you will see the real nature of life. Or to put it more graphically, now we see the human personality. And according to the teachings of the Buddha, there are 9 apertures. And 7 of them are found on the face. Just think of it. We find the 2 eyes, the 2 ears, then the nasal passage, 2 of them. And we find the mouth. And we find 2 other apertures which you know. And out of those, the face, which is the most beautiful thing in the world, and all of us are taken up by the external beauty. And we do everything for the face. There's a facial massage, and then we go about 2 or 3 days' time, the ladies go still more, before a mirror, and see the beautiful face, how beautiful it is. But the irony and paradox of it all is this, that 7 of the apertures that are found in the human body, 7 of them are on the face. And what emanates from them? Putrid matter, not perfumes or scents. Now this is not pessimism. That's why the Buddha told Rahula, meditate on the impure nature of the human body to get rid of lust or passion. Now today, young people are constantly bombarded by sensory or sensual thoughts to the mass media, to radio, television, the magazines and press. And their emotions are aroused to the mass media. And what happens? The defilements that are latent and dormant in the human mind are aroused. Something like this, to give a simple illustration. when the tiger is fast asleep, he's an innocent creature. But when he gets up, he's a bit dangerous. And then he pounces on his prey, still more dangerous. In our personality, these defilements, this akusala, are in three stages. They are dormant, just like the tiger fast asleep. Now at this present moment, when you are listening to the words of the Buddha, all your defilements, greed, hate and ignorance, are fast asleep like a tiger, fast asleep. Now you are quite innocent now. But when you get back to your homes or to your offices, then all the defilements come uppermost in your mind. Comes, wake up, just like the tiger waking up. It becomes a bit more dangerous. Then what happens? We take anger. Now you don't find anger in your mind. It is dormant, just like the tiger fast asleep. But if a certain person comes and scolds you and provokes you, then you get angry. And then your face changes. Up gradually. That's why I say certain conditions, prerequisites should be fulfilled before you could attain Nirvana. You have to do it yourself, do the job. You can't expect something to turn up all of a sudden. Just like during the time of the Buddha, there was a certain Brahmin who said, I'll show you a shortcut, easy cut to attain Nirvana. How? There is the Ganges, the river. If you go and bathe there, all your sins will be washed away. Then the Buddha said, Brahmin, you say that all your sins will be washed away. What about the frogs and fishes? They are always in the water. So they must, all their sins are constantly washed away. Now see, the Buddha had a sense of humor. He said, water has an inherent property, an inherent quality, to wash away everything. What about your virtue, your good deeds that you have done? That also must be washed away. Then the Buddha said, Brahmin, there must be that inner purification. You can't just wash your face and then attain Nirvana. Or you have to wash yourself in the waters of dana, sila, bhavana, of sila, samadhi, panya. Now see, from the beautiful, he took it from the background of that Brahmin, and then he preached to him. So we see, my friends, the inner purification should be there. And now the Buddha went on, the sixth meditation. He said, Rahula, meditate on anicca, impermanent nature of life, to get rid of pride, vanity.